pulled away.
A note is honorable from the vow.
Thank you.
The chairperson, may I hand over to you?
Yes, morning. Morning to honorable members. Morning to DBE. Police is led by the DG. Morning to Malusi, led by the Professor Goldmink and the CEO, Tatera Komezi. And morning to the space delegation as well. Morning to the parliament support staff and the ICT, everybody that is in the meeting. Can we do the roll call, Llewellyn?
Thank you, Chairperson. For the portfolio committee, we have Lisa, Honorable Binkovdaba Chairperson, we have Honorable Aduin, Honorable Tumela, Honorable Morasepa, Honorable Van der Walt, Honorable Ping, Honorable Mashabela. I have two apologies for the portfolio committee. It's Honorable Matezi and Honorable Sikas. And from the department, I've received written apologies from both Minister and Deputy Minister. Thank you, Chairperson. That is the roll call. Remember, it's only the portfolio committee. We don't have the select committee with us today.
Thank you very much. Sorry, Chairperson, I'm also in. And
Wella,
my name is
Honorable
Dr. Tembekwayo.
Honorable Van der Walt. Thank you, Honorable Dr. Tembekwayo. It's noted.
Thank you very much.
I have two.
Can we get a roll call from DBE? DG?
Chair, honorable members, the chair of Umalusi, chair of SAIS, although I was trying to check, I couldn't see the chair on the platform.
The
CEOs of the two entities and colleagues from both DBE and the portfolio committee and Umalusi and SAIS. In the meeting, as you correctly acknowledged, is myself, Minister and Deputy Minister, send us their apologies. We have Dr. Rufus Polia, we have Mr. Mahada, and then we also have Mrs. Mulelekwa, the acting CFO, and the acting branch head for the administration branch, Chief Director for Finance. We have Mrs. Lizel Carolson, who's mending our office in Cape Town.
And Deputy Minister.
Yeah, I think those are the... Chair, those are the officials of DBE that I've been able to speak up, and I've been informed that they form part of the meeting. And I think the rest, then the two CEOs and the chairs will then introduce when you afford them the time. To do your presentation, to do the presentation. On a lighter note, I hope next time also to be Johnny Walker,
Mr.
to present whilst traveling like
Honorable
Van der Waart.
Thank
you, Chair.
And Deputy Minister. Thank you, Honorable Dr.
Tembekwayo. Thank you very much. Can we take the roll call of Umalusi, Professor Bolnick? for the CEO, whoever that is going to be able to tell us of you.
Thank you, Honorable Chair.
Sorry.
We have today with us Dr. Mapfura Kumeci, who's the Chief Executive Officer. We have Mr. Emmanuel Kibanda, the Executive Manager, Qualifications. We also have with us Ms. Zodwa Madiba,
Honorable Member,
Executive Manager, Quality Assurance and Monitoring. Mr. Ben Kiet, who's the Acting Chief Financial Officer. Mr. Dumasani Malure, Senior Manager, and Stella Mosime, Senior Manager, Strategy and Finance. Mr. Lucky Dituanian, Senior Manager, Public.
Check, I couldn't see the chip on the platform. The CEOs of the two entities and the colleagues from both the portfolio committee and Umalu.
Good morning, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Committee members. The Chairperson, Councillor Mawutokele apologized to his prior commitment. We have with us two members of the Executive Committee, especially Councillor Galen Bowles, who is the Chairperson for the Registration Committee, and also Councillor George L. Temba, who is the Chairperson for the Finance Committee. Also, Chair, we have the Chief Financial Officer, Mr. Maurice Matindani, and the Head for Registration and Teacher Professionalization, Ms. Yvonne Lechaba, and the Head for Professional Development and Ethics, Mr. Boucher, and we are also accompanied by Ms. Lehotwala, who is assisting us with research check. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, members, we've got the apology of the Minister and the Deputy Minister, like the DG has alluded to. Any other apology, Llewellyn?
Good morning, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Committee members.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
Those are the apologies that we are having for this week.
An apology of Chief Financial Officer, Mr.
Those are the apologies that we are having. Today, members, we are having briefings from both our entities, and then we are going to focusing on the annual report
2019.
Can I get the adoption of the agenda? Yes, Honorable Suela.
I move for the adoption of the agenda, please.
Thank you. Any second?
I second, Chair, as well.
All right. Thank you very much, Honorable Members. In the absence then of both the Minister and the Deputy Minister, DG, can I just hand over to you to say something before I give over to the entity?
Well, Chair, there isn't much really that one can say, simply to appreciate and acknowledge the fact that the two entities are ready to present to the Portfolio Committee. And as honorable members would have seen from the report presented by the Auditor General 2 weeks ago, there has been tremendous improvement on the audit profile of the entities. And I'm sure that the detail of the presentation today will attest to what we have seen from the presentation by the Auditor General 2 weeks ago. That's all that I want to say, Chair. Thank you very much.
Thank you, DG. Without wasting time, Professor Bodu, can I hand it over to you?
Thank you, Honorable Chair, and Honorable members, DG, members of the leadership team of the TDE, CEO, and other members of SAFE. I would just like to express my gratitude for the opportunity we have this morning to come and present our annual report for the 2019-2020 financial year. This is the fifth and final report of the 2015-16 to 2019-20 term. And it is my great pleasure to let you know that after 18 years of unqualified audits, we finally have achieved a clean audit. There was great jubilation at Umalusi that we've been able to attain this. This achievement can be attributed to the determination shown by the CEO and the whole Umalusi team in putting systems in place to guide the administration and the delivery of services by the organization. During my tenure as chairperson, I've observed consistent improvement year on year in the management finances, the management of performance information, and governance of the organization that have led to the achievement of this clean audit, which is indeed, again, if I may repeat, a remarkable milestone in the history of our organization. So in the light of this achievement, Honorable Chair, Council remains committed to supporting the efforts of management to achieve more clean audits. We will not rest on our laurels, but in the current medium-term strategic framework, we will strive for further clean audits. The role of Umalusi, always remind ourselves, is to discharge our fiduciary duty in relation to three things: organizational performance, governance, and financial management. And these three critical areas constitute an essential part of Council's fiduciary duty as commissioned by the Honorable Minister of Basic Education. I'm pleased to report that to this end, Umalusi has made massive strides in meeting its legislative governance. Council will continue to guide and support management to navigate the current challenging fiscal environment occasioned by COVID-19. And of particular concern to us is the prospect of further budget cuts, because it will undoubtedly prove to be a massive challenge to all public entities, not only to Umalusi. Before I hand over to Dr. Akumetsi, Honorable Chair, to lead the presentation, I just want to say we look forward to a fruitful engagement. And I just want to ask, if after the Umalusi presentation is over, if I could be excused because I came out from another meeting, and with your permission, I'd like to leave after the presentation. Thank you, Honorable Chair.
I'm grateful, Dr. Akumetsi.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Members of the Portfolio Committee on Basic Education, and also thanks to the chairperson of Umalusi Council, Professor John Paul Minks. Also, I want to pass my greetings to the DG and colleagues from the Department of Basic Education, and also my colleagues from SAIS, Me'ela Mkhalane and her team. The presentation that we'll be making this morning will focus on the background, audit report, performance information, human resources, and financial measures. I'm going to be sharing this report, this presentation with Mr. Lamosimehi and Mr. Divisani Maluleke, who is the Director for Finance and Supply Chain Management. First of all, I want to give the background, which talks to the mandate of Umalusi, that we are a quality council responsible for qualifications registered on the General and Further Education and Training, that framework of qualifications. We ensure that the providers of education and training have the capacity to deliver and assess qualifications and learning programs, and that they do so to the extent of quality. That's what we've been mandated to do. We derive our mandate from two pieces of legislation, namely the National Qualifications Framework Act 7/2008 and the General and Fair Education and Training Quality Assurance Act number 58 of 2001, as amended in 2008, acronymed GENSEQA Act. I need to indicate that we are mandated to develop and manage a sub-framework of qualifications in collaboration with the South African Qualifications Authority and the other two quality councils, namely the Quality Council for Trades and Occupations and the Council on Higher Education. This is because we have to ensure that there is synergy in the system in terms of articulation of the system. This we can achieve through the support of the necessary quality assurance policies and processes. As we develop those processes, we also develop the policies for quality assurance of provision. We are mandated, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Members, to maintain a database of learner achievements and related matters and submit such data in a format determined in consultation with the South African Qualifications Authority, recording on the National Learner Records Database. We commission and research related to the development and implementation of the South Framework of Qualifications. And we also have got formal relations that are in the Act that we can advise the two ministers, Minister of Basic Education and Minister of Higher Education and Training, has got a new name in terms of designation, on matters related to the General Education and Training sub-framework of qualifications. We have to collaborate with the South African Qualifications Authority. We have to collaborate with the Council on Higher Education and the Quality Council for Trades and Occupation. One other thing that we need to do is we need to do advocacy on the staff framework of qualification. In other words, advocacy on the qualifications that we offer and advocacy on the policies of Umalusi. As already indicated by Professor Volming, we have achieved our first unqualified audit opinion with no material findings, also called a clean audit, and we are still celebrating, but we are not going to be celebrating for two because we have to sustain this performance. At this point, Chairperson, with your permission, I want to ask that I hand over to Ms. Ellen Smith, who is going to go on with the presentation. Thank you, Chair. Stella, are you there? Hello, Stella?
Yes, Chair. I thought I had unmuted. Let me just repeat how I started my presentation. I wanted to greet the Honorable Chairperson and the Honorable Members of the Portfolio Committee, the DG of the Department of Basic Education and Team, FACE, CEO and team, and everybody who's attending this Portfolio Committee. I'm going to take you through performance information, which will reflect the vision, mission of the organization, the values, the summary of performance, and then performance per program, program 1, 2, and 3, and then we will conclude on performance information before I hand over to the director, the senior manager for finance. Honorable members, the vision and mission statements that appear on this page have been with us for the last 5 years. The 2019-20 is representing the final year of the previous 5-year term. So the vision and the mission that is reflected here, we have presented it over and over again in the last 5 years. So I'm not going to go through it, but we just needed to reflect on it because these are the guiding statements that help us to do what we do. In addition to that, we have values that we have upheld on leadership, decisiveness, diversity, transparency and fairness, professionalism, quality, teamwork, integrity and equity. This is how we've been operating in the last 5 years, guided by these principles of behavior. Now, the next slide represents the overall status of performance for the financial year 2019-20. As you can see that figure, it represents achievement of all targets that we
have. My apologies, Chair, for interjecting. Stella, the presentation is not showing on the screen.
Okay, I don't know what is happening.
Ms. Mosumege, if you want, I can try and just load it from my side. You will start to indicate when we need to skip slides.
Okay.
You seem to be back on.
Is it there now?
Yeah. And please do slideshow, Stella.
Okay, we are on slide 11. Slide 11 shows the achievement of targets that we had set for the financial year. And when I move on to slide 12, the report shows the achievement per program, which also reflects that program 1, 2, and 3, all our indicators, all our targets were achieved. That is slide 12. Slide 13, we are giving a summary of what Program 1 is all about before we report on the achievements of Program 1. In the full report, there's a full description or narrative on the achievements that have been realized by the 5 sub-programs, that is strategy and governance, public relations and communications, information and communication technology, human resource management and development, and finance and supply chain management. So the indicators that will be reflected when I move to the next slide. The first indicator on the annual performance plan approved by 31st March of financial year, we're able to achieve the target in terms of 2020 APP being approved by March 2020. Not 2020, that's a mistake. It's supposed to be the 2020 APP for the current financial year. It was already approved by March 2020. Second indicator on quarterly reports submitted, 30 days after the end of each quarter, we were able to achieve that every single quarter, and also got feedback from the minister pertaining to that. The third indicator on the number of communication platforms that we wanted to use to communicate with our stakeholders, we targeted 7 and we achieved 7. The fourth indicator in program 1 is about compliance against the requirements of the ICT governance framework. This is something that is mandatory for all government departments and public entities. Because we started in this very 5-year term, our target was that by the time we get to the 5th year, we should be at 98%, and we achieved that. The 5th indicator, average of government agreements and assessments that were submitted on time, the target was 98%, and we achieved 99.9%. The last indicator, program 1, it changed to the percentage of valid invoices that we were able to pay to our creditors within 30 days as prescribed by the PFMA, and the target was 99%, and the output was 100%. When we move to program two covers 2 sub-programs. The first sub-program is on qualifications, curriculum, and certification. This is where we ensure that the status of our qualifications is developed, maintained, and reviewed. It is within this sub-program, again, where curricula relating to the qualifications are evaluated to ensure that they are of acceptable quality. It's in the same sub-program we deal with certification of candidates at the end of each examination cycle. When candidates have achieved, we produce those certificates based on the records that we receive. We also verify qualifications that are on our sub-framework. As soon as we receive inputs from or requests from clients, we process those verifications and give feedback. The second sub-program deals with statistical information and research. We conduct research and analyze reports that relate to the quality of our qualifications in the GFED QSF, and we conduct research that is informed by the emerging needs of the education system. We also report on key indicators of quality and standards depending on what we research, as long as they pertain to general and further education and training. We establish and maintain databases. We're talking about our learner records here, that the CEO talked about, that within our mandate we are expected to manage those learner records. And we lead research and analysis and provide statistical support and information across Umalusi. For instance, during the standardization process, this function leads in terms of providing information and support for the standardization process. Now, in terms of the indicators and targets that we set, the first one was number of reports produced for the management of the sub-framework. It's a comprehensive report that is produced at the end of the year, and it will contain everything that was done, whether it's violation of curricula or whether it's anything that has to do with the sub-framework and the qualification. And curricula evaluated, we targeted 2, we achieved 4. Percentage of error-free learner records for which a certificate is printed after receiving information on certificates, everything that is slim, our target is to produce 100% in terms of certification, and we were able to do that. Percentage of verification requests, as I indicated earlier, our time frame for efficiency purposes is 2 working days. We receive input, we process them within 2 days. Our target is 95, we achieved 98. In terms of number of research reports that we were able to complete, we targeted 3 for the year and we achieved 3 as planned. We're moving to program 3, which is quality assurance and monitoring. It has got 2 sub-programs, or should I say 3, because the 2 are related in terms of quality assurance of assessment. we separate into school qualification and post-school qualifications, but the functions are similar. So the sub-program deals with external moderation of question papers, deals with external moderation of internal assessment that is done by institutions, deals with verification of monitoring of the assessment system. It also deals with the monitoring of the conduct, administration, and management of assessment and examination processes, like now exams are on. We do monitor what is happening. Management of concessions, assessment, and examination irregularities. Very soon it will be time to do marking and processing of the output of what was written by learners. And during those times, we have to deal with concessions that have been applied for and irregularities that are identified during the process. We also deal with external moderation of the marking process. The second sub-program is on evaluation and accreditation. This is where we accredit private education institutions, private assessment bodies. And the whole accreditation process entails that we ensure that standards of provision are determined, maintained, and strengthened. We ensure that systems are in place to quality assure the capacity of private education and training institutions that are seeking accreditation. We also check whether there are systems in place to quality assure the capacity of private assessment bodies that want to assess our qualifications that are registered on our sub-framework. In terms of the targets that were set for the year, the first target is about the number of quality assurance of assessment reports published. What we do here is, because we do a lot of work, quality assurance of assessment involves a lot of processes and activities. At the end of the year, we produce a comprehensive report, and we targeted 10, we achieved 10. Percentage of question papers approved by assessment body and qualification and examination cycle. This is a very loaded indicator, as you can see. Per question paper, per assessment body, and also per examination cycle. There are qualifications that have got many cycles within 1 year. And the target is 100%, we achieved 100%. Number of assessment bodies audited for their state of readiness to conduct exams. Just for 2020, we've just done a process that relates to that indicator. So for last year, our target was 13. The state comprises of 9 provincial departments and the 4 private assessment bodies. So we achieved, we were able to audit all assessment bodies. Number of subjects for which verification of marking is conducted, we have targeted 80, we achieved 90. The fifth indicator, number of offerings where moderation of FBA and ICAS is conducted by assessment bodies. A qualification examination cycle is another loaded indicator which deals with moderation of internal assessments that are done in institutions. We have targeted 150 and we achieved 208. Under accreditation and evaluation and accreditation, the last two indicators, percentage of accreditation outcomes for private education institutions finalized within 12 months of a site visit. This indicator marks the end of a process, a very long process, which starts with institutions applying. And now after we've made a visit to an institution, the indicator is about measuring the percentage of, you know, institutions for which we have given an outcome. And an outcome is not about being positive. It could be accreditation, it could be not accredited, or it could be provisional accreditation, any form of outcome is included. So the target was 82, we achieved 89. The last indicator, percentage of private education institutions that were monitored after being granted accreditation to ensure that institutions do not slack and forget after getting accreditation, they go back to wrong ways of doing things. We do monitoring to make sure that standards are upheld. Target was 92, output was 94. Now, what contributed to us getting a team audit on predetermined objectives or performance information for us to get a team audit? I'll just go to the second bullet. The APP targets has been achieved for the whole year, and the main thing that has contributed is in the last 2 years we established this committee, which comprises of executive management, to look at the report and to raise issues concerning the report so that if there are challenges, they can be highlighted and addressed in the course of the year and be cleared by the time we get to the end of the year. We also appreciate the role played by the Audit and Risk Committee, Council and ESCO, which holds management accountable and also, you know, ensures that we've got internal controls to not underperform at any point in time. At this point, Honorable Chairperson, with your permission, I'll hand over to the Senior Manager Finance to take us through the rest of the presentation. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Stella, and good morning to the Chairperson, Honorable Members of the Portfolio Committee, the DG, Chairperson of Umalusi, and the colleagues from Umalusi and Faith. The presentation has to do with the human resources as well as the finances. In terms of the employment and the vacancy and the employment changes, and all figures that are presented are as at 31st March 2020. In terms of this slide, the employment and vacancies as of 31st March, we have approved posts equaling 141, and then the staff complemented to Umalusi were 136, so with 5 vacancies and 4% vacancy rate. This slide shows the staff complement from last year up until the end of 31st March 2020. We had 17 appointments and then 10 resignations for people who left Umalusi, leaving us with a net surplus of 7. In terms of the financial matters, the audit report, we're going to present the audit report, the statement of financial position, statement of financial performance, as well as material items to highlight, which include the cash surplus and the fruitless and wasteful expenditure. On the audit report, as it is already indicated by the colleagues, the institution received a clean audit. It means the audit report has got no material findings, and the financial statements were free of material misstatement. And there was no instances of material non-compliance that were reported by the Office of the Auditor General in terms of the requirement of the applicable legislation. Then the overall financial viability of the institution is very good at this stage. And then the official of the institution are competent and skilled. In terms of the financial position, as you can see, the cash and cash equivalent at the end of March 2020 was 43 million. And then the accounts receivable increased from 5 million to 7 million. And then our total assets increased from 92 million to 110 million at the end of this March. Then in terms of the liability side of the financial position, you can see that there was a deadline in terms of the accounts payable. This can be attributed to the quick down times in terms of paying service providers, and then our total net assets increased slightly from 71 million to 87 million. While we're in financial position, I think the emphasis is to look at the property, plant and equipment that increased by 26 million as a result of revaluation.
and then the employee benefit obligation as well that we currently pay to the pensioners, and then the revaluation, as I've indicated, which is reflected on note number 3, that increased by 26 million. Then on the statement of financial performance, the DB grant increased from 128 million to 104 million, while our own generated income has shown a little bit of a decline from 26 million to 22 million, and then the other revenue decreased slightly from 5.7 million to 5.5, and the interest that is generated through the cash reserve that is deposited with the Reserve Bank slightly decreased from 4.5 to 4, it remains stagnant actually. And then the expenditure, the total expenditure decreased slightly as a result of the savings that we realized towards the end of the financial year, and then particularly as a result of traveling that subsided when the COVID hit our shores. This graph compares the actual revenue that has been collected versus the budget. We budgeted the total revenue from our own income to be 36 million. The actual revenue that we managed to collect is 32 million, while the cost of employment increased slightly by less than 1%, and the goods and services in connection with the budget was under budget by 4%. The balance in terms of the cash surplus, we made a request to National Treasury, and it will be utilized to finance the project that is currently ongoing. We've got an adjacent building that is currently being done, and we are anticipating the planned project to start early next year in February. Then the DBE assisted us with retaining the surplus to, from National Treasury, and the approval has been granted by Treasury to retain the surplus. And then the revised budget for 2021 has been submitted to DBE and it has been approved. The fruitless and wasteful expenditure, there was a disclosure on the financial statement on the annual report relating to the PAYE deduction to SARS. And the corrective measures have been implemented to ensure no repeat, and the disciplinary steps have been taken against all the people who were found to be involved. The payment made in 2018-19 to the joint venture for the cancelled renovation project of 6.6 million is also disclosed on the annual report, and the parties involved agreed to take the matter to arbitration, and the matter is ongoing. At this moment, I would like to thank the members, and I will hand back to CEO to give the closing remarks.
Chairperson, having made those presentations with my colleagues on the comments organization and the financial statement of the organization, I want to thank the committee for affording us the opportunity of presenting this report to the committee, and thank the chairperson of the committee and the honorable members for this. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Dr. Rakomesi and your team for the presentation. Without wasting any time, let's give over to Mem Khalani.
Okay, thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. Can I just hand over to Councillor Bowles while I'm to see if you wait while I'm loading the presentation?
Oh, okay. Alright.
With your permission, sir.
Honourable Chair, members of the Basic Education Portfolio Committee, the DG and colleagues from Basic Education, our colleagues from Umalusi, and as SAIS, our first presenter apologies from our chairperson of SACE, Mr. Chele, but we do appreciate the opportunity to present to you this morning. And I think there needs to be commended all the stakeholders in education that despite these very difficult times, we've still been able to work towards achieving many of our mandates, and that reporting has been controlled and is strict, and we do appreciate this, because as SACE, we always look to the support of our stakeholders with their guidance, their wise words, and in education moving forward overall, if we did not work together, we would not be seeing the strides that we are making. So, Honourable Chair, with just those few words, I now would ask our CEO, Ms. Ella Mokolani, to take us through her presentation. Thank you.
Very much, Chair. And your team.
Okay.
Okay. Thank you very much, Chairperson. Let me just greet the honourable members and also our DG, the officials from the DBE, including the Chairperson of Umalusi and the CEO
and our colleagues from
Umalusi. We are presenting to you the annual report for the financial year 2019-2020, and we are indicating, Chair, that we have divided the presentation into three. What I will do is to present Part A, which is giving you the overview of the service delivery environment and context, and also Part B, which is dealing with program performance. I will then, at the end, when we deal with Part C, hand over to the CFO, Mr. Maurice Mapindane, to finalize with the annual financial statements for the organization. So just to also indicate that in terms of our annual report, we've got five different programs as highlighted on the slide. Registration, ethics, continuing professional development, professional standards, and policy and research. And therefore, we will be giving you our performance for the period under review on those particular five programs. Just like Umalusi, I will not go through the vision and mission, because again, they've been part of the last 5 years. We already know them by now, including the values that we have for the organization. If you allow, Chair, that I keep that in order to save time. From the legislative and policy environment, obviously we get our mandate from the NDP in terms of us playing a role in ensuring that the teaching profession has got professional standards, and that we move towards a process of professional certification in order to ensure that teachers that are coming into the profession, that we accept into the profession, are competent and have gone through a particular process before they can even be accepted in the schooling environment. And obviously, through our management system, we are dealing with the issue of making sure that the continuing professional development that is provided to our teachers in schools is of high quality and is fit for purpose,
and through the six processes it has been quality assured.
These are the other pieces of legislation that have got impact on the work that we are doing. Without necessarily going into them, Chair, just to say that they are pertaining to, obviously, our mandate is safe, but also from NQF Act, there are a whole lot of other areas that we're supposed to be working on, including making sure that as we professionalize the teaching profession, we also bring into the profession what I always share with yourselves, the issue of professional designation, which is again something that is foreign to the teaching profession, and we are slowly sharing it and advocating it with the profession so that the profession can warm towards that. obviously, why we are implementing the continuing professional teacher development system through the National Policy Framework on Teacher Education, and also as we are about to go to the
education,
Teacher Development Summit,
overall,
which is going to review
the work
that has been done through the Integrated Strategic Training Framework on Teacher Education and Development. We are hoping that from a state point of view, we'll be able to make a huge contribution so that and strengthen the work that has already been done through different partners, through different stakeholders. So that's the briefly the policy environment that we are working in. And obviously, we also sharing with you the strength registry that we are currently utilizing. We are currently using to make sure that the profession is regulated accordingly. We are also indicating, Chair, and reminding the public and also ourselves that the state is regulating the teaching profession in terms of educators that are employed through the Employment of Educators Act, which is from both school and also office-based, but also from the higher education sector. Remember, we regulate across basic and higher education. Obviously, we're dealing with the TVET college lecturers and also community education and training college lecturers. We have started the process of preparing for registration of student teachers from year one. However, currently, during the year that we are reporting, the focus is more on student teachers. And obviously, as we continue, we are also reporting on the extent at which we are registering and professionalizing the ECD sector, which is something that is very critical as we move into migration into of ECD into DBE. Obviously, we are also registering people that are outside the teaching profession, mainly because we are supporting the priorities within the basic education, priorities of the sixth administration in terms of the technical, vocational and focus schools areas that have been identified, and therefore one of the areas that we are regulating is the people who are academically qualified, however they are professionally unqualified from a teaching perspective, and therefore people that are working in focus schools, in technical high schools, in TVET sector, in special education needs schools, and also schools of skills are being registered so that we can be able to assist and support the DBE and also the entire education sector with regard to those priorities. Chair, you would remember that one of the areas that we've been reporting for quite some time in the portfolio committee is the issue of us being present in all the 9 provinces, and we are reporting that we are now present in 5 provinces as reflected there, and the CFO will indicate in terms of the surplus that we are having, how are we moving away from rentals to making sure that we secure our own buildings. And generally from the overall performance delivery environment, just to indicate, Chair, that we reported last year that we have developed the online registration system. We are continuing, and at that time we were piloting it, and currently we've opened it up for all the educators that are registering, and we are continuing to strengthen it on the basis of the feedback that is coming from teachers. However, we also want to indicate that while you have we're still going to take long for teachers to warm up and change in terms of working on online. Most of them believe in walk-in and getting registration on the spot. But it's something that we are advocating so that we can move with the fourth industrial revolution. However, taking into account those that are still struggling with some of these issues. We also want to appreciate the strengthened relations that we are having in terms of taking the teaching profession forward, the partnership and collaboration that we have been with the Department of Justice, which is more appreciated. You would remember that we struggled for quite some time in terms of accessing the National Register for Sexual Offenders. And through program one, you will realize that we are making strides in terms of the registrar from the Department of Justice, in terms of that register, working collaboratively with us in terms of a pilot of looking at screening teachers that are coming to register with us. Also, the way that we're doing with SAQA to make sure that we minimize the fraudulent qualification, including appreciating both the chairperson and CEO of Umalusi and the staff. They are playing a very good role in terms of ensuring that we register fit to practice teachers by working with us and ensure that every teacher that is working in independent school is registered with SAYS and necessarily qualified. And Home Affairs is assisting us a lot in terms of making sure that the foreign nationals that we are registering coming into South Africa are coming into the country legally and for the correct documentation. And therefore, we need to appreciate those collaborations, because without them, there's no way that we could have achieved some of the targets that we've achieved. Council has successfully managed to sign up the overwhelming majority of teachers that we're having in the system. And therefore, we've removed that indicator as we went into the new 5 years and focus more on ensuring that our final year students in higher education institutions sign up for participation, for registration, but also sign up for participation and continue professional development, so that by the time they are newly qualified and come into our schools, at least they are ready in terms of understanding that they need to be lifelong learners. And we also want to report, Chair, that we are continuing to ensure that the set ethical standards within the teaching profession are maintained. And therefore, overall, during the period under review, we've managed to strike off 26 educators. We've removed them from the role for violating the code. And 17 of those, because they are cases by nature, involved minors, we send them to the National Child Protection Register through the Department of Social Development, and so that they do not teach in the country, or they do not even work with any child in any form throughout the country. And as I close on the performance delivery context, we also want to indicate, Chair, that when the CFO report, you will realize that we once again received an unqualified audit. However, like we said earlier on, there's a need for us to strengthen the entire internal control processes so that we can minimize the issue of having misstatements, and those areas I'm leaving them for the CFO report. Coming into the predetermined objectives, we are reporting, Chair, that during the period under review, we had 11, total of 11 indicators. We've achieved 8 of them, which is an improvement from the 18-19 financial year, because if you check the comparison on this slide, you realize that previously the overall performance of the organization was 47%, and now it has moved to 72%. These three indicators, Chair, let me not go through them now. As I deal with the programs, I'll be able to deal with them accordingly. The first program, which is registration, we have two indicators. One on the number of new registered educators. Our target was 35,000 based on the figures that are coming from the majority of higher education institutions, so historical figures. However, we managed to only achieve 31,769, and we've got a negative deviation, as you can see, which means around 3,000 plus educators, new educators could not be registered. Either we slightly over targeted this indicator, or from the higher education institutions, this is what the universities have taken in terms of their enrollment. The second one check is about the newly qualified educators who registered previously provisionally, and they are updating from their provisional status to full state registration status. In terms of this indicator, we have overachieved it by 7,000 plus. Again, it's showing that we are having a whole lot of newly qualified educators, especially from the distant higher education institutions like UNISA. Hence, the targeting is a bit difficult because you've got UNISA, which is a distant higher education institution with plus minus 50% plus in terms of the production of newly qualified educators. And however, they don't take four years. Many take over 4 years, and therefore, in terms of planning and targeting, you're going to have this kind of challenges because you're relying on one of the biggest institutions in the country that is dealing with the majority of educators. We are also indicating the comparison between the 2 years, the previous financial year, and the one that is, we are reviewing. Despite the fact that the first indicator was not achieved, we are seeing an increase in terms of the numbers that we managed to register this year on that, on the new registrations. We are continuing, Chair, to also remind the public, but also honorable members, in terms of the scope of registration that we focus on, as I've dealt with it earlier on, but just to highlight that it's about fully qualified educators, but also about the student teachers that we register in their fourth year. And we are emphasizing that final year registration or fourth year registration, it's not about giving the student teachers a license to go and teach. It's about us to say when they go to the teaching practice, they should be able to remember that they are entering schooling environment, and therefore they need to behave in a particular manner. Because we've been receiving lots of cases coming from student teachers. If they are not registered with council, you then do not have jurisdiction over them. And that particular registration is more about them, but also to remind them that they are a member of a teaching profession. A teaching profession runs across the entire teacher education and development continuum. We are having an interim measure, Chair, of academically qualified and professionally unqualified practicing teachers. Those are the people with, for example, BA, BSc, BCom, but do not have the professional qualification. We're giving them a period, interim period, to move to PGCE, and failure to do that within a particular period that council will determine, it would mean that we take the registration, provisional registration status away from them. Because we believe the teaching profession must have people that are academically qualified, yes, but also professionally qualified. And we also want to highlight to the committee, Chair, that we've noted the employment of teacher assistants in schools, and I'm talking about teacher assistants even prior to the announcement of the president on the issue of youth unemployment. That's one side. But also recently the issue of education and school assistants that are coming into the schools. And we've also indicating, we've noted the level of qualification that they are at. And therefore, on the basis of that, we are declaring to the committee and to the public chat to say states would not be registering them, because they do not fall under our jurisdiction, and I've indicated given the level of qualifications and other related matters. And therefore, when there are ethical matters pertaining to all those categories, the responsibility will be of the employers and not states. And we are re-emphasizing this issue because every time you have an issue in a school, and we've seen even with the scholar transport and security issue in Soweto, where about 30 learners were sexually abused by the security guards, by whoever everybody was saying, where is this? Forgetting that SACE has got a mandate, and that mandate is limited to the teachers who are qualified and who fall under our scope, and therefore we are declaring that we would not be dealing with those in terms of our process. And Chair, we are also reminding the committee of our professional registration value chain, which I'm not going through it, but just to appreciate the fact that the screening against the National Register of Sexual Offenders finally has commenced, as I've indicated at the beginning. However, the screening against the National Child Protection Register remains a challenge. We are relying on the Provincial Education Departments and GBE to deal with that particular part. While we are not able to access that register in terms of Part B, we are, however, able to feed into it in terms of Part A, where we bring teachers that have been struck off, and that struck off would involve a case where minors are involved. I'm not going to deal with this slide, Chair, because it's just unpacking the entire registration process, but also to indicate that in line with the issue of supporting the DBE priorities in on the 33 model, on the 11 focus areas pertaining to focus schools, we managed to register about 3,472 educators who received, not even educators, we don't call them educators because they are not, who received special registration in that category. To say this is what we're supporting in terms of from our registration, but also we managed to register 2,836 ECD practitioners, and the overwhelming majority of them were registered at NQF level 5, which means they do have, some of them do have NQF level 4, but we don't register them unless they give us proof that they've registered NQF level 5. But it also shows that in the work that we're doing to personalize the sector together with the work that DB is doing and ELRC and SACWA, there's a need to encourage and move towards supporting and encouraging them to move towards at least the 360 and 480 credits qualification that are already there. Also, remember, we're screening educators against, applicants against the SAPS register or database of criminal offenses. From the 79,884 applicants, which means the new registration plus the second indicator on those that are moving from provisional to full registration, a total is 79,000. And out of that, we've screened each and every one of them. And out of the 79,000 plus, we managed to get 59 with criminal offenses. And we are highlighting them there in terms of the areas that are there. And we also want to indicate, Chair, that 29 out of 59 were recommended for registration because they've gone through the speech-to-teach practice process, which goes through their processes, which goes through their record and satisfy themselves that they have rehabilitated and therefore they can join the profession. However, 30 out of 59 cases were handed over for further adjudication so that we can deal. I mean, those are the people that have dealt with murder, with maybe sexual offenses and all that. We need to make sure that we do a thorough check before we can be able to hand them over to the registration section. As much as I've indicated that we're working with the Department of Justice in terms of accessing or screening our applicants against the National Register of Sexual Offenders, we need to report, Chair, that the system is quite manual and it's paper-based. When you're dealing with a volume of 79,000, it's practically impossible to be able to do justice to your registration processes, otherwise you're going to have too many delays and all that. But we are working with justice. We're just showing you a process that needs to be followed, and the amount of paperwork that is involved, and the manual processes that is involved, and also the lack of capacity within the Justice Department in terms of dealing with this, because there's no automated system. However, we are reporting, Chair, that in line with the outcry that has been there, the work is being done. We're running a pilot with Justice, as they are busy also themselves to try and work with DSD in terms of aligning their systems and coming with an automated. But it's better than not doing anything. At least from what we have given them up to now, there is no positive whatever offense that we received from that particular search. And I've said it previously that it's going to take long for us in the education sector in particular to be able to get somebody from the National Register of Sexual Offenders, because that person must have gone through the criminal system and there must be a criminal conviction before you can go into that particular register. So the move for the 9 provinces, for SAIS and everybody that is in dealing with cases to report this matter to SAPS is very important, so that when we have the strike-offs from sexual offenders, we can end up reporting them to SAPS and they can go through the criminal justice system and ultimately through to that particular register. Otherwise, you are likely not to find teachers unless they've committed that and gone through the criminal justice system directly. Just to indicate, Chair, that we failed also to share with you where we are with regard to registration, because during the national lockdown, there have been delays, there have been complaints around the slow processes of registration, and mainly because of lockdown and the fact that we were working online. I know complaints were sent all over the country in terms of the registration process. We've noted all those issues, and we are reporting, Chair, that our systems are back on track, and from the level 5 to 2, we managed to register approximately 12,000 educators. However, with moving to level 1, alert level 1, we've reopened the offices in terms of the walk-ins. The offices have been opened all along. However, we've been working online and through emails and all that, which has got their own challenges. However, since the 1st of October to date, you would have seen that we've registered close to 12,000 educators. And again, it proves what I said earlier on, that educators believe in walk-ins. They believe in physical processes. They believe in sports registration. And this is just giving you an indication in terms of our provincial offices and the national office where we are since the 1st of October 2020 until now. Moving to Program 2, Chair, which is the ethics, is dealing with our mandate of setting and protecting and maintaining the ethical standards in the profession. The program had one indicator, which was percentage of cases finalized. Because of not being able to, or not having control of all the cases that are coming in, you may get the number of cases at the beginning of the financial year, and you may get a number of cases towards the end of financial year. And as a result, it's difficult to have an indicator that is saying you can finalize all the cases within the financial year. And as a result, the issue of us having rollover cases will continue to happen. However, what I said to the colleagues is the extent at which we try to minimize and work collaboratively with the department in terms of them sending the cases to us timeously. So 75% was the target from the 550. We managed to achieve 68.74, which means 284 cases that we managed to conclude. And we are rolling over I'm beginning to see it. 100 and
20-something, which is a negative deviation from that particular indicator. While we did not achieve that indicator, you'd remember that we reported over and over again that we had cases that have been rolled over three financial years. And we need to report, Chair, that we, for the 2019-20 financial year, we achieved 2484, as you've seen. And in addition to that, we've managed to finish 172 rolled over cases. So you would have seen also in terms of this presentation where we are putting measures in place to deal with these rollover cases, that by now, as I'm speaking, the three financial years are cleaned up with 2018-19 standing at 80-something percent, and you'll be able to see that as I come to that slide. But also to continue, Chair, to indicate that Western Cape, Gauteng, and KwaZulu-Natal continue to play their part and be the three main provinces that are reporting religiously on the cases that they finalize in line with Section 26 of the SAFE Act, but also in line with the EEA. And it sometimes it paints a picture that may say these are the three provinces that are having issues in terms of ethical conduct. And I want to indicate that it's not necessarily the case, because those three provinces are doing their part in terms of making sure that they report those cases to SAFE and the others remain behind. And it's something that we've been reporting together with through the DGE to HEDCOM, for HEDCOM to assist us in terms of sending those cases. But certainly, Chair, we're continuing to see top three, if you can look at the table and the next slide, the top three cases being corporal punishment and assault, and also the second one, which is continuing to contribute to what the president calls the country's pandemic gender-based violence, and also the issues around verbal abuse that are also contributing to a certain extent to violence against the teachers that we are seeing in the country. So we are working, as you can see in the slide, with the Human Rights Commission, and we will be inviting the DBE and the provinces and other partners to continue working collaboratively in dealing with the scourge around gender-based violence in schools, especially where teachers continue to violate the rights of the learners from a sexual abuse perspective. So that particular work also involves the research that we want to deal with, because advocating has been done, a whole lot of talking has been done, and a whole lot of processes have been in place to deal with this and inform teachers to refrain from. And the sanctions were supposed to deter. For example, Section 17 of the EEA is already indicating that sexual misconduct is a dismissible offense. And from our side, we're prioritizing sexual. So there's something in the system that needs, something else that needs to be done besides what we've already done, because this issue, if you have sexual abuse coming from position 5 in the previous financial years and moving to position 2, just now we should go to position 1, because it looks like the message is not filtering into the schools in terms of those. So we're looking into understanding the profile of these educators, and also looking at the emotional and psychological issues that are really affecting them in terms of things that they continue to do, things that they are not even afraid to continue with, despite the fact that the whole country is against gender-based violence. We are reporting that we had 17 strike-offs from the 29th that we have, 26, sorry,
And this 17, all of them are sexual misconduct. We've taken them to the Department of Social Development so that they can be put into the register for child protection. And those teachers will not be able to work near the children in any time. So overall, in terms of the cases that we dealt with, in terms of disciplinary processes, remember others, we deal with them, but there are other processes of finalizing them. So we have 103, but most importantly, this slide indicates that we removed 26 indefinitely. And as I've already indicated, this includes the overwhelming majority of the 26 are your sexual abuse related cases, but also few are on physical assault where children were injured, and some of these cases where they were taken for litigation through the criminal justice system. Three were removed for a particular period, which means they can still, for example, if it's drug off and with 5 years or drug off with 10, 15, you, after rehabilitation, you can still come back into the profession and apply for reinstatement. And some of the cases that falls into this category would include where teachers are proposing learners, but there isn't anything going beyond that particular proposal. Or it could be corporal punishment, where a learner is injured to a particular extent, or certain utterances that pertain to harassment, where teachers say certain things when they see children passing with short skirts and all that, and those that are the ones that we strike off and give them suspended sentences. And then you've got, we give them a certain period. We've got the ones that are suspended. They are being given strike off, however, they are suspended they are suspended with a fine of, for example, 10, 15,000 or 20. We've got 74 of those, and the bulk of them are those that are practicing corporal punishment, because sexual abuse is a no-no. It will fall under strike off indefinitely or under being removed from the role for a particular period. And again, all these 26 would have been taken to the DBE, taken to the 9 provincial education departments, because in terms of the EEA section 15.2, automatically they are deemed to have resigned. And I think this is where we have a challenge sometimes, where if that sanction is not enforced through the PED's process, or even independent school employers or SGB employers, you continue to find some of these teachers in the profession. But we are doing it diligently. We sent the list to the DBE, they check for us, and in most cases, from the public sector perspective, in the last 2 years, we've realized that this process is helping us, because it's rare that we come back with teachers that have not been blocked against PESAL or other processes. There's been a one case, but the rest, we are doing well. Earlier on, I indicated the 172 cases that we dealt with during this financial year. Sorry, not this one, the financial year that we just closed, but also to indicate the rollover cases that we had from 2016-17 until 2018-19. We'd have seen that 16-17, we are done. 17-18, we are done. 2018-19, we are at 84.52%. We are left with few cases that we should be able to close during this financial year that we are in, 2020-2021. At least this process is moving very well in terms of making sure that we deal with the historical process of cases that are not being finalized. But also, as part of remedial, you'd remember that when presenting our APP, we indicated that we brought in new indicators that will ensure that
while we deal with the cases of a particular financial year, we also deal with the cases that have been rolled over from a previous financial year. So those indicators must be paired so that both investigations and disciplinary hearings can be tracked as we go along. The third one, Chair, is on continued professional teacher development system. Again, this is the only program from SAIS that is being funded externally through FISCAS, and it is being funded through the line items that are coming from the basic education department, and we need to appreciate the process that the DBE is dealing with. Historically, we had challenges in terms of this funding, but in the last 2 to 3 years, Chair, it has been moving very smoothly and the money has been coming timeously. This particular indicator, we achieved three. Only one on approving professional development providers, the new ones, is the one that we could not succeed. But the others are done, Chair. However, while we appreciate the fact that we managed to even go beyond the target with this indicator, you would have seen that 467,673 overall educators in the country have signed up for participation in the CPTD system. You can see their profile. We are able to know in KZN, if you press this eye, who are the 100,000, you are able to know, to analyze the data in terms of the age cohorts, the experiences, the qualifications, who's teaching what, where. The challenge remains the disjuncture between who signs up and also who is reporting in terms of the participation in continuing professional development. So that's the one area that is a challenge that we are working hard on to make sure that as many educators as possible continue to participate in continuing professional development must also report. But also similarly, the employers, the providers, the schools must also do their part in terms of reporting on behalf of the educators. And we also want to congratulate, Chair, the 10 districts that we've highlighted there that are doing their best in terms of participation in continuing professional development and reporting for their teachers, including the top 10 schools. And we were saying it will be interesting to do an analysis after the release of the matric results to see if there's any correlation between what these schools are doing and also the top 10 schools or even top 100 schools, and also the results that are coming from the matric results. Next one, Chair, fourth one, second last, is on teacher professional standards. We have the standards that have been approved by council. We presented them to HCOM, we presented them to CM, CM noted them. Initially, they were supposed to be gazetted in terms of the formal gazetting process through the DBEO and the minister. However, upon reflection, council took a decision that there was no need to gazette the standards, taking a cue from the ethical standards that we already have, that we developed them. We are implementing them in terms of dealing with the ethical issues, and we did not necessarily gazette them because Section 2 and 3 of the Section 2 of the SAIS Act is giving council mandate to set, maintain and protect the teaching profession with regard to the ethical and professional staff. What we are currently want to share them with all the stakeholders for final time, so that from the new financial year onward, we can implement them 100%. We have started that particular process.
would have seen that the DBE induction model is already based on the 10 professional standards. You also see that from the higher education institutions, there's a teacher choice in action model that has been developed for the teaching practice during the national lockdown as an alternative approach. That particular module and process has been based on this standard. Universities are trialing out the development of their programs in terms of the standards, and also very interestingly, from the Department of Higher Education perspective, the minimum requirements for teacher education qualification for the that is going through review currently has incorporated all the standards to say when your student teachers or your newly qualified teachers graduate from higher education institutions, they should be able to graduate with the competencies and also the outcomes and attributes that are informed by those standards. Then established a testing between, say, DBE, DHET, to make sure, and an efficient Dean's Forum to make sure that from the higher education perspective, we are beginning to influence the kind of a teacher that we want to be, that needs to be produced by higher education institutions, and the extent to which the standards will be taken by.
The first statement that we are presenting is the financial proposition of SAIS for the end of 2020 financial year. Let me indicate that our financial position remains stable with decrease in total assets by 6%. And in terms of the non-current assets, which mainly we talk capital assets, there was no acquisition. Therefore, there was in that regard. Our current liabilities increased from last year, this the same period, by 28%, which was mainly because of the unspent CPTD grants, as well as the accrued expenses end of March, whereby because we closed the office 4 days before month end, most of our operating expenses hadn't been paid, so they remained unpaid at the end of March. We've just been later, so they increased the liabilities end of the year. And our accumulated surplus increased by 3% because of the cost-saving measures on general operating expenses, as well as the unpaid grants.
Let me indicate our financial position remains stable, and it shows going concern with mainly will assets that as an acquisition. Therefore, that decreased from end of financial performance, which normally or commonly known as income statement. We attach the next slide, which also shows the operating expenses in respect of the income and expenditure. Let me indicate that our operating revenue transactions increased by 3%, and we also had an increase of 27% on the CGD subsidy spending compared to the previous year. Our total revenue increased by 7% because of the increase on CGD funding and increase in collection in terms of our mainstream of funding, which is subscription and registration fees. In terms of the expenditure, our personnel expenditure increased by 26%. The vacant positions were filled, and the effect of inflation contributed as well. Our operating expenditure increased by 42%, mainly of the legal consultations and inflation effect. The total expenditure of the year increased by 34% because of the operating cost and personnel expenditure. Let me indicate that sales operated within its collected revenue of 112 million, leaving a surplus of 5.2 million. Approval has been obtained to retain the net accumulated surplus for contingency and increase the client provincial point. Let me move to the next slide, which is the statement of changes in net assets. It just shows the movement of assets that from cash we moved to other form of assets. Our total net assets increased by 3% due to the retained surplus for the year. And we still indicate, as I've indicated, no acquisition of material non-current assets was done during the year. Moving to the cash flow statement, our cash inflow into sales increased by 7% because of the CPTD grant and subscription fees, and the net cash flows from operations decreased by 55% because of the increase in operating cost, which resulted in outflow. The cash and cash equivalents by end of the financial year was at 107 million, is the one which have indicated necessary approval in terms of the net accumulated surplus and obtained, which we'll use, as I have indicated, for contingency operations as well as the increase of provincial contact points, which is currently in progress. It will be reported end of the year in terms of how we've moved, but we have made good progress in this current financial year. In terms of the audit report, Chair, let me indicate that we obtained unqualified audit opinion with a few missed statements of information which were identified and corrected during the audit, as well as there was an emphasis of measure which was raised on the regular expenditure of 184,000, which arose from the deviation from the procurement processes. and corrective measures is underway in terms of the procedure which is supposed to be applied in dealing with irregular expenditure. That concludes the finance part. Thank you.
Thanks, Chairperson. We are done.
Thank you very much. CEO and for the presentation, can I note members that would want to have a bite on both presentations? There is only the hand of Honorable King and Dr. Tebogwayo and Honorable Siwela. Can we, in the meantime, allow those three hands? Honorable King?
Good morning, everyone. Thank you for the presentations that we received. I do apologize for not having my camera on, but we are having a bit of load shedding where I am. First of all, I'm just going to make my first question to say, and my concern that I saw on the SAES presentation was mainly those excluded from the scope of SAES, like your transport, like your security and all of them. So my concern basically is they do not fall under the mandate, so they will then have to fall under DBE's mandate in terms of cases of sexual harassment and violence against our children in at school. So I just wanted to find out, was there any discussion with DBE to look at how these can then be looked at for police clearance and to check against the register? Because it will remain a concern, because our learners actually are part of, these people do form part of the daily routine of most of our children. Then to Uma Lucy, I just wanted to find out, I haven't seen anything that being presented on the general education certificate for grade 9. Chief, how far is the accreditation of the certificate? How far have you been within this time frame that's under review? And then the last question basically is on the research. I just wanted to find out, have you done any research within this term, especially now with the COVID-19 pandemic, on looking at ways if we have virtual examinations now for grade 12 going forward? It is going into the next century of the fourth industrial revolution, and I think that we should actually be looking at a way of doing virtual exams going forward. Thank you so much, Chair.
Good morning, and thank you very much, Chairperson. I also have got an unstable connection here, so I can't put on the video. To Uma Lucy, I just want to find out whether they have students from the universities who are conducting their researches, and if they have, from which universities, are used to conduct the researches to obtain the necessary data. And then to say, I just want to find out about the DBE have made an announcement that 300,000 teaching assistants will be hired and given a stipend. What is, how does this 300 assistant teachers suit? How are they accommodated in SAES? And then the last one is about the teachers who are proposing learners. To say it starts with the proposal of educators to the learners that leads to sexual abuse. That is the first starting point thereof. And it leads to a lot of things for the learners not to be given the right marks, learners marked or maybe less handled negatively by those educators. So I feel such teachers are not supposed to be given the second opportunity. They should be struck off the roll. That's my proposal to say, how will it be if they put upon such measures to say they are not supposed to be given a second opportunity to come and teach at schools. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chairperson, and greetings to colleagues. First, I just want to commend Humanity on the achievement of the clean audit. This has been something that has been said for quite a long time, but they are working towards achieving it. And we are elated that eventually and finally they did receive the clean audit. And the challenge, therefore, for Umalusi would be to sustain that. But up to so far, thank you for good work in this age where clean audit outcomes are a rare opportunity. On phase, although they did not achieve some of their outcomes, but it is noticeable that they were able to improve from about 42% to about 70% currently, which is also quite commendable given the fact that they have been working under difficult circumstances, just as we all know. However, I have got one or two questions to ask. There has been talk of witnesses that were unable to cooperate on the cases, and that perhaps has caused them not to finalize some of the cases. But I would like to know, what are the reasons for their non-cooperation? Are they being intimidated or any other reason that would be for them not to cooperate with faith, given the fact that probably they are the ones that obviously have reported the perpetrators to them? The second question is based on the ethics of educators. And of course, when honorable member has said that they should be completely removed from the register and from the presentation, they also to record them in the register they have, they need the cooperation of the police services and so on, where the teachers probably would also be criminally charged and be found guilty, and therefore they would be able to be included in the. However, in the meantime, what is probably says doing to instill ethics on these educators, given the fact that there is a code of conduct, and apparently some educators simply ignore that. It is safe, but apparently educators ignore it and get into trouble. What is it that who must show good behavior on the educators in order to prevent a situation where teachers have to be struck off the roll by committing simple offenses? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson. Greetings to all members of the Portfolio Committee, the DBE team led by DG, Umalusi team, and also say good morning. Chair, thank you very much for the opportunity, and let me also appreciate the presentations that were made by two NGGs, and also commend say, Umalusi for a job well done of attaining a clean audit. And the improvement also by days, I think also it needs to be acknowledged, Chair. I have a few questions for this. Firstly, on the issue of the targets that were not achieved on page 18, the target they set for themselves was 5,000 educators or new educators, but they managed to reach just about 21,000. What are the challenges of the entity to meet the target? Secondly, also, what are the same page? I just want to find out if the entity does have the capacity to meet their target. On page 19, Chair, although their performance have improved from 47% to 2018-2019 financial year to 72% in 2019-2020. My question on that one is on the issue of the cases that have been or complaints that have been reported. You'd find that 8% of corporal and assault, corporal punishment and assault, the sexual misconduct, rape incidents, assault, sexual assault, and all those things is 92, which is 22%, and verbal abuse, which is 15%. Chair, my question is on the one of the entity itself. How does it going to improve the ethics of educators and ensure that all our learners are safe in school? Because it's a worrying factor that despite such a misconduct, especially the sexual one, in such a high rate or high number, it is a challenge, and I think it needs to be addressed, Chairperson. Those are the few questions that I would need to get clarity on, but overall for me they've done a good job, and I think we must also learn from them, especially the one of Umalusi in obtaining a clean audit. It's something to be proud of, but we'll also observe how they maintain the clean audit in the next coming years. Thank you, Chair.
Any other hands? No hands. Okay. Let me also welcome the both presentations from both entities, and asking to join members as well in congratulating both of you on your voted outcomes, especially Umalusi for the clean audit. And SAYS have done well as well for the unqualified audit opinion. We would want to see this DPE one day. Hopefully DG is gonna come very soon. The issues that I just want to raise from SAYS in particular, under program 3, your target for developing teachers was 10,000, and you overachieved actually, because you are reflecting 20,000, which is 200%. What is it that you have done differently to overachieve, and what programs were teachers put through for development? And if possible, can you just tell us which provinces have benefited in that And then there is a slide where you were speaking on the issue of racism, and you are claiming that it is at 1.64%. Now, my interest on this matter is considering the narrative that are out there in the media, and I mean even the recent one now in the Western Cape. My interest actually in this question: what type of surveys are you using to get into reporting on the race in the country? Because the concern is that both learners and educators do experience the prejudice, either at a point of application to access education or during the learning and teaching. But my interest really is what type of survey are you using, and what is the methodology that you are applying to capture the race cases as say. And then as a program one, there are educators who have criminal records, and in your analysis, you are saying most of the scenarios that the physical assault, the theft, and driving under the influence. Now, can you tell us what is it that you are doing in supporting those teachers in the behavior that they are showing? And try to move them away from this type of criminals. I mean, of the cases that they are having. And the other thing is you are saying that there is a slide where you are saying that you are the academically qualified and professional teachers must have a postgraduate certificate in education. Just for interest sake, why are you enforcing this qualification for them for this type of teachers? And then on Umalusi, I think honorable members have really spoken at length on the issue of the audit outcome, which you all support, and which you all think that it must not again deteriorate the government. But there is just a few things that I want to find out. And one is being now that you are doing so well, and the reality that you are faced with is that there are no signs of an increase in terms of the allocations that you are going to. In fact, actually, the department is going to get, I don't know for how many years to come, but the situation is not good. And how are you going to maintain this type of body that you are having? And my understanding is that now you've got about 5 vacancies, and that needs resources. Would it have a direct financial impact for you to fill those vacancies, or how are you going to deal with that? And then the second question that I'm having is on the issue of your general education certificate. How far are you in terms of analyzing and quality assure the GEC certificate, and are they registered with BACA? And then the last thing, briefly, the issue of the joint venture between how far is the case? Can you just brief us on that? And did you manage to get money back? And we were expecting you to get them back. So those are the issues that from my side I would have wanted to raise. But all in all, I think you are doing very well, both of the entities, and congratulations once more on both your audit outcomes. Let me then allow this time responses, and I am going to give probably DG first to speak, and then immediately after that, I'm not sure if the problemic is still in the meeting, but if not, the CEO would lead for Malusi, and then space would respond later. Thank you very much.
Chair, my humble request is to speak at the end, please, if you don't mind.
No problem.
Thank you, Chair.
Malusi?
Thank you very much.
You are
happy. Remember let me
indicate that with the GEC, the qualification from the Department of Education for evaluation, we have provided feedback on the qualification of the Department of Education, indicating the areas of strength and the areas of weaknesses of qualification, and this areas need to be amended. We have requested the Department of Education to submit us. But I have been affecting those amendments that would threaten the qualification further. To receive those and put them through the qualification process, they'll be taken to council, for council to approve. At the process of to then register the qualification with the South African Authority. I think the ball is in the court of the Department of Education.
And
we have provided them with the necessary
feedback.
Chairperson, we have not done research on ways of
analyzing and
sexual examination. We could do that,
and then
it will depend on the assessment body's readiness to implement, because they talk to that we are not implementers.
How far is the
qualification? Can you just
say,
maybe we have to push the ball the other way around, that maybe the department will research, and once they have researched, they present their findings and their plans to us. And then we'll look at whether they meet the qualification criteria that we can. It will be an exercise in futility for us to do such a research, because we are not the implementers and we don't know what resources the department
has to
implement such an important innovative venture. Our rules,
if
they do have such a research and its outcomes and its findings, to see where a particular implement will meet the criteria of quality assurance regime. Honorable Dr. Tembekwayo, there is no research that has been commissioned by Umalusi that is done for experience. There is none whatsoever. We take our own researchers who are in-house and seasoned senior professors from the different universities to do our research where we need to outsource the service. However,
Chair, my humble request is to speak at the end.
Research with Umalusi would be those who approach us as individuals, as to data, to use our data for research papers with master and doctoral degrees.
once we approached by them, we've got a process internally of approvals. We check the ethical issues, we check whether the data would be used ethically, and then I give approval for students to be given data that we need. And also we have added a rider that they should share the product of their research with us in order for us to grow the web of Umalusi. So we do have such relations, and even when we get approached by the students that study at the different universities. We appreciate the comments from the different members of the portfolio committee. We are very happy that we are being called. We are going to sustain this. We are going to not be complacent. We are not going to have long celebrations. I commit that we are going to regress. And one way of doing this is to give regular feedback to the staff of the say what the entity of the minister, of the NG, of the portfolio committee is in relation to the clean audit. And I'm going to do exactly that after this meeting. To say to my staff, this is the expectation of the portfolio committee. We can't afford to be complacent. We can't afford to regress. We can't disappoint. We can't drop the ball. So that is the position that we hold. Honorable Chairperson, on the questions that you raised, I remain equally worried about what we are getting from the department to fulfill our mandate. If you look at the size and scope of our work, where we cover the whole country in terms of quality assurance, you look at the number of candidates for our examinations, that remains a worry. In the past years, even before the session, we started raising issues of the budget not meeting the obligations of Umalusi and the staff being overstretched. We've been asking for additional funds, and instead of getting the additional funds, now with the recession, the monies have been deducted instead. As indicated in the report, we lost in this financial year already 2.8 million of our budget as per the instruction of National Treasury and the Department of Basic Education. This is despite the fact that the department has introduced additional subjects over the years, stretching the staff of Umalusi, stretching our budget. This despite the fact that, as the other members have asked, we've got a pending qualification, the GEC that the members have asked about, where I've mapped the process and the progress that we've made thus far. Not only that, it is also the NASCAR that is coming to the picture. And both departments of basic education and higher education want to introduce further subjects like robotics in order for them to meet the obligations of the fourth industrial revolution. I don't know, Chairperson, how we are going to cope. I've made a recommendation reluctantly on a number of fronts to council. First of all, we're supposed to have had an additional executive manager position. With the reduction of our budget that came around September, I've had to request the council to withdraw the position, the new position of executive manager. Reluctantly requested that because we overstretched in that regard. Also, I've requested a council, and it still has to be ratified next week or so when we have a council meeting. It has been tricky time when we have a council meeting. I've already tabled the matter with the executive committee of council that when vacancies arise, we are not going to automatically fill in the positions. We are going to freeze some position when vacancies arise from now onward until we know what the future is in terms of funding. Whenever a position will become vacant, say somebody resigns, we are going to sit with executive managers and assess whether we can survive without filling that post for some time and fill it later. But in the case of critical positions, we have to fill them immediately. Chairperson, I've been very reluctantly looking at what is happening in the education space.
The media already knows, that the organization, the South African Qualifications Authority, is now retrenching 71 employees, one third of their workforce, because of what has not done. I don't want to get Umalusi there, unless the portfolio committee advises otherwise about the freezing of posts, and unless council advises otherwise. As the chief executive office, I have to be proactive and show risks areas of what is confronting us as we look at the scenario that we are operating in. That is about that, Chair. Regarding the joint venture, I need to sketch the picture and to recap for the benefit of the members who are sitting in this committee, may not remember the details. The joint venture was given in the spirit of trying to spread the cake. So the members of the JV presented their documents, the three in the JV. Just for the record, it was the CET, it was Creek, the company, in Kabini. And they called themselves Kabini Joint Venture. After starting the work and after the bid had been allocated, and the work had started on campus here, we got a complaint from Creek and Kabini that CET is running away with the joint venture alone. They are not getting involved. Left behind, their signatures have been forced into the JV and so forth and so on. We requested the members of the JV to resolve their differences. And we could not, in clear conscience, continue with the tender with the fraud that was alleged in the matter. We took the matter to court, making very slow progress, but we then agreed we were going to take it for arbitration. All the parties signed for arbitration. Unfortunately, by the time the pre-arbitration meeting started, the member who was accused with having run with the JV without other members died. It's only an essay that remains, and it's only a partner who remains. So we're at that position. We're waiting for an arbitration meeting to happen, because a pre-arbitration meeting has already been held. We're just waiting for the arbitrator to give us the date for the meeting. The decision of the arbitration is binding to all the parties. Unfortunately, Chairperson, last week, Wednesday, we had an incident which I reported to the minister and to my council, where we were confronted by a group of 10 to 15 men who just bashed at Umalusi here. They arrived, they met the CFO site, they could not speak in a civil manner to the CFO, ex-CFO. I was then called out, and then I went out with my executive manager to meet them. They were very rude. They were very rude. Their language was very abrasive. They were demanding that we pay them a further 2.9 million. The claim they made under Creek, who was one of the members of the JV, was that they were subcontractors when the work was happening next door. And then that they have to be paid 2.9 million. There was a big brouhaha outside. It was a hullabaloo outside. My life was threatened directly that I will be killed, that I don't move in the air and get out of this gate. I then said, gentlemen, I'm not continue talking to you unless you are civil with me. And if you are going to be civil, we can get into my boardroom, because we're standing at the front entrance. We can get into my boardroom so that we discuss the matter. They then agreed to elect a delegation of four. That met me and the two executive managers, Ms. Kitibanda and Ms. Ramadimakwan. They explained their problem to say they subcontracted and they didn't get paid. Well, I said to them in response that the matter is up to the K, I cannot comment, but out of decency and trying to play transparent, I'm going to respond by saying, as things stand, no one owes anybody until the arbitration pronounced or until the court pronounced. And also, my understanding, when there was a fallout in the JV was that it is because CRIC was not involved. CRIC was never on site here. Nick and Gabin were alleging that CET was alone on site here. The meeting ended amicably with CRIC committing to go and pay its subcontractors. And the police had been called in the meantime. And a case of intimidation has been opened with the South African Police Services, because we cannot afford to have lives threatened in the manner in which my life was threatened. Another point, just before I land, is that they were also threatening to disrupt examinations by shutting down Umalusi. I need to submit, Chair, that since the incident of last week, Thursday, which was just on the eve of the start of the critical examinations, there has been no further disruption at Umalusi. We have not been confronted in the manner in which we have been confronted. In the meantime, I've been advised by the Umalusi lawyers to get a protection order. I thank you, Chair. I think I've answered all of this. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Dr. Taylor.
Thank you, Chairperson. Let me start with the issues that you raised, and I will link some of them with the one that was raised by Honorable Ching and also Dr. Tembekwayo. You raised an issue, Chair, of the academically qualified but professionally unqualified educators. And like I said, I want to link that with what Honorable King indicated in terms of whether were there any discussions with DBE with regard to the grouping that is being excluded from the safe scope, and what Dr. Tembekwayo indicated in terms of the 300,000 assistants that will be employed from the Department of Basic Education, and in terms of how are they accommodated by SAIS. Just to start, Chair, by indicating that as SAIS, we are in a process of professionalizing the teaching profession. And in doing that, one of the things that we took, council took a stand on, was that we will have qualified teachers in our classrooms. And that is why from the scope of registration that I've indicated, there are two areas. We registering fully qualified educators and give them full registration status, including student teachers in terms of their provisional. However, the only concession that we're making is when we have people that are working in order to satisfy the requirements for the three model and also focus school areas, that we give special registration only, and it's conditional. That condition is saying Elam Khalani will teach in this particular school of aviation in order to teach aviation and nothing else. So because of that particular process of us cleaning out and making sure that we have a credible teaching profession, we have the integrity of the teaching profession, and we have people that are qualified in each and every classroom across the country, we are saying we recognize the fact that you're academically qualified. Yes, they do have, for example, math and science in terms of BSc, they've got accounting and economics in terms of BCom. However, we need them to be professionally qualified. And the reason why we're making an issue out of it is that we are saying, yes, they've been employed, but however, we're giving them grace period. We are supporting them in terms of how do they move towards attaining postgraduate certificate in education in order for them to qualify as professionally qualified teachers. Because we are a profession, we need to protect the integrity of the teaching profession. We are a custodian of the teaching profession. And we are saying we do not have a situation in other professions where, because I have a particular qualification, I can just get into the nursing council and say, I want to be a nurse because I have this qualification. So it is within that particular context that we feel
our educators must be professionally qualified, and it is within that context that we are working with when they accredit your independent schools. Because independent schools were also using this to say, what is your academically qualified educators? Why are you making an issue out of it? So we're working to make sure that our profession is really having qualified people. That's number one. And secondly, linked to Dr. Tambekwayo, the grouping that is coming into the schools, and subject to correction, DG will add at the end. We're having that 300,000 grouping, which if you check the requirements are at grade 12 level, if I'm correct, in terms of your education assistance. And the general assistance are even, grade 12 is not even a requirement. And therefore, in terms of this 300,000, they cannot be accommodated in this scope, because in terms of our criteria for registration, in terms of our mandate, they are way, way below the requirement, and they are not teachers, they are not professionals, they are not coming into our schools to deal with curriculum per se. They may be assisting teachers in classrooms with 1, 2, 3, but they are not necessarily professional educators. And therefore, we'll be going against our own mandate. We'll be going against what we stand for in terms of having the credible and integrity of all the teaching profession and professionalizing the teaching profession. And that is why that particular group is not part of that. Similarly, we've noted, and I've raised it in one of the health committees, that we've noticed there are provinces that are employing teacher assistants. As long as we haven't discussed with the DGE, with the 9 provinces, what does teacher assistant mean in terms of the qualification, in terms of the level of training, and how do they come into the profession, we're not going to take responsibility as council to be saying, if anything happened into the school, people must come running to this. I chose last time that we take discussions as a sector to say, if we want to bring in, I'm not taking the 300,000, that is a different grouping. If we want to bring the teacher assistance in schooling environment, are we saying we are bringing the paraprofessionals? Like is happening in, if you go to a pharmacy, you will see a pharmacy assistant. Those paraprofessionals come into the teaching profession, they come into the nursing profession, they come into the pharmacy profession because they've gone through a particular training, and there are requirements from the professional councils within those professions to say, these are the minimum requirements that we require. They are not teachers, we can't expect them to have teaching qualifications. However, as paraprofessionals within that particular profession, they need to have certain requirements at qualification level. So it is within that context that SAIS is not part of, the teacher assistant is not part of the education assistant and also your general assistant. Then moving to the issue, Chair, that you raised with regard to the 59 applicants who were referred to the Fit to Teach because when they applied, they had offenses. This is a grouping that come out of the teaching profession and they want to come in. However, because of us, again, professionalizing the profession and wanting to maintain a credible teaching profession, we are screening. We screen against SAPS database, we screen against your Department of Justice. And we found that this particular grouping, against their police clearance certificate, there are these areas for these things that they've done historically. What we do in order to bring in the restorative justice into the process, we take them through the Fit to Teach Practice Committee, which is made up of educators, because SAIS is a self-regulatory body by Teachers for Teachers, and also some of the panelists that we have. They go through that process, and we assess the extent to which they've been able to be rehabilitated. You'll even get those that are coming from prisons, those that are students that, for example, your must call students that had problems in terms of the political issues of burning buildings and all that. They must have gone through a particular process to rehabilitate themselves. When they come to us, we assess. However, we take them provisionally so that they can be supported from wherever they are working, and we demand a report on an ongoing basis just to make sure that they are really, really fit to practice in our schools, and we don't take them into the profession and later find out that we have challenges. And from our mandate and also our jurisdiction, we can only go up to that particular level. It will also be from the employer side to see to what an extent are they continuing to provide additional support for the particular educators to continue with their program. Then there was an issue, Chair, around program 3 in terms of the kind of support and development and support that we provided. Because we are a professional body that has got responsibility to quality assure professional development programs and make sure that they are fit for purpose, we do not necessarily offer continuing professional development in a sense of the curriculum related kind of a programs, your math, your all the areas that are in curriculum, classroom practice, etc. What we deal with from SAFE point of view is to support educators on the professional aspect. And I think I'm linking this also to what Honorable Sewela and Honorable Adjuns, in terms of what are we doing to make sure that we make sure that the ethical conduct of the teachers is intact and we instill that within the teaching profession. One of the big areas that we are working on in terms of teacher support and development is an ethical program. And we are not doing it for practicing educators only. It's also about your student teachers, because we believe that if we don't deal with the student teachers, you have a problem of professional development that doesn't take into account the issues holistically. And then you're going to work on a deficit model instead of working on teacher development across the teacher education development continuum. So we look into the student teachers to say, this is the program that we are seeing when you join the teaching profession. This is how we're supposed to behave. We also provide the code of professional ethics, but with the practicing teachers, we did research, if you remember well, that we also circulated to yourself to identify areas, hotspots. And with regard to those areas, that's where we come in and say, we need to make sure that teachers within this particular district, all of them, they go through this particular program. But also what made us to even exceed the target more was the collaboration that we had with the Provincial Education Department. We worked with Mpumalanga in particular. It's working on this. We worked with Northern Cape. We worked with Limpopo Department, KwaZulu-Natal, Free State. In fact, all of them. All of them we managed to touch them. But that collaboration with them, but also collaboration with teacher unions, because if we are leaving the teacher unions out, they are more influential to their members even more than the department and all of us. So we have a joint dedicated program where we take the leadership of all the teacher unions across the country, including their members, in terms of what it means to be an ethical educator, what it means to be a lifelong learner within the teaching profession. Also, the other program that we are running is on teachers' rights and responsibilities, to say, yes, there's violence on you, yes, you're complaining about working in an environment that is not conducive in terms of COVID-19 related matters,
However, you have responsibilities on certain areas. You need to do your part, you need to do this. So we are balancing the two to say, while you complaining about your rights, this is how we deal with them, but also you need to come to the party in terms of making sure teaching and learning comes into the place. The last area that we're focusing on, Chair, is on them developing their own professional development portfolios. This is about them reflecting on their own practice and understanding the reasons why they are not achieving results in certain areas and what are the things that they need to do on their own and taking responsibility for their own professional development. Because if your 500,000 teachers can wait for the state to be developing them, then we are not going anywhere. Again, it's part of professionalizing the teaching profession to say teachers as professionals, there's that inherent part of them that is saying, as a teacher at Mahoka High School, I need to take responsibility and reflect on my own practice. Not only reflect, but also make sure that I take action in terms of some of the things that I'm having challenges on. And I think from the grouping that we worked on, we're beginning to see the results, and it would again be interesting to see from what they participated on, from the kind of cases that we're receiving, are we not getting their names, but also from the matric results point of view, from those that are in primary, to what an extent they make progress in terms of that. So the research part come into place today. What is the correlation between the work that we are doing in developing educators and the effect on their own professional practice? So that is on the last question, honorable member, that you asked. And also there was an issue from honorable Adjuan. I've responded to the one on improving ethics of educators, whether we're having capacity to meet our targets. I would say not 100%, Chair, because especially from the ethics point of view, yes, we have employed additional staff. Yes, we have a group of panelists. However, given the number of cases that we receive versus the capacity that we have in terms of dealing with those cases, there's a mismatch. I mean, if you're getting 500,000, it's not even all provinces submitting. It's not even all everybody in the country submitting. We are pushing the provincial education departments to report, and you would see that the cases that are coming this year, you're going to get even more. Let's say if you get around 800 to 9 to 1,000 in a year, it's even becoming worse in terms of the internal capacity on those. But these are the issues that Council is looking at. But also just to indicate, like Umanzi has indicated, like the issue that we've seen from SAQUA, we also going to experience challenges with teachers now having issues around the salaries being frozen and increments not being made. It has got a ripple effect for future in terms of whether the state levy, monthly levies, would be able to be increased. And if that is not increased, it will have ripple effect on what is it that you'll be able to do in the next coming financial years, because remember, say, unlike the other entities, it's dependent 80% or even more on the money that is coming from the teachers themselves, and only the CPTD system is the one that is funded through government. So yeah, that balancing act needs to be done, and we need to see what it is that we can do. But we are moving into a process of training more and more panelists to make sure that we increase the capacity to deal with the cases. The target, honorable audience, in terms of program one on the 35,000, it's something that I've indicated to say, you can use the projections that you're getting, historical projections that you're getting from the output that is coming from the university, to analyze and say, these are the numbers for the final year students, and therefore we're going to put our target on the basis of the historical
historical numbers as historical projections. However, there are instances where even though you have the projections, which is something that is beyond our control, the numbers that are coming into universities, remember that indicator is more about your new registrations, which is your final year students. And it depends on whether the enrollment in higher education institutions do match what we have. If the intake is low, it's to a certain extent, despite the projections that we have and the targets, it might be affected. And I've even indicated that the situation is even worse when you take into account a higher institution like UNISA, which is having more than 100 and something thousand students in the College of Education. However, the period that it takes for students to finish the qualification, you can use that as a projection, but that period that they take to come to the final year, is unpredictable because of a whole lot of dynamics that are affecting those kind of students. So that particular indicator, but we'd see when we report next year that we try to look at the dynamics, and already by now we are nearing achieving the target even before the next coming form. So we've managed to address that particular one. There was an issue around from Honorable Sewela in terms of the reasons why we have witnesses that are not cooperating, and also how do we instill ethics in teachers. And I think the issue of instilling ethics in teachers, I've dealt with it in terms of the programs that we are running and also the sanctions that we are giving in order to deter them. But obviously, it all depends on me as an individual educator, the level of my professionalism, the moral compass that I have, and also to what an extent am I following the code as an individual. So the systems are there, the processes are there, the advocacy are there, the lessons are there. Hence I was saying, we are now moving into a process of collaborating with institutions like your Human Rights Commission and CGE Gender Commission to look into other factors than what you've already done, to see what goes into the profile, what is the profile of these teachers and what goes into their minds and what and all that. Maybe from that angle there are other things that we can be able to find and add into what we're already doing. The issue of witnesses, as you've seen in the report that we've sent to Parliament and also the work that we continue to do, parents are the main problem. And the reason why they are a problem, as I've indicated before, teachers tend to take poor parents for granted. They would give them money, and when you approach those parents for them to come to the hearings, then they move backwards because they've been promised money for a particular period. And we are trying to look at a way of working with the Department of Social Development and bring the Children's Act into place because those parents are selling the souls of their children. And if we're going to continue leaving the situation as it is, then we'd have failed the children of this country. And we need a cooperation also with the provincial education department to say, if these parents are accepting bribes, how do we bring in social development from the child protection point of view to deal with the parents in that perspective? But also there's an issue of intimidation. Remember I said when the teacher is charged, that teacher remains in the school until the teacher is proven guilty. So the period that the teacher is staying in the school, despite the fact that I've abused the learner sexually, I've done outdrafting, they see that teacher on a daily basis because the teacher is not being suspended. And remember, this does not have authority, doesn't have a power to suspend any educator. It's a labor perspective issue, it's an employment issue. It's only the employer that can be in a position to suspend a teacher for a particular issue. So those issues, again, the intimidation that goes along while the teacher is going through the disciplinary hearing and investigations are being done are also contributing to the intimidation. Dr. Tembewa, you indicated an issue to say proposing a learner, the whole issue of sexual abuse starts from there. Yes, you're correct. What we are saying, for a long time we've been striking these educators, even if they proposed or harassed or whistled or said unsavory words to a learner, especially girl learners. However, we remember in terms of our disciplinary processes, the SAIS sanction can be reviewed in the High Court. So there's a case precedent that is in the Western Cape High Court where we struck off an educator who said some unsavory words to a learner, who proposed a learner, and that particular case was reviewed. If you check the case of Arnold Robertson, you will get the entire process where the judge said to say you need to rehabilitate these people. Instead of, proposing a learner and just saying some words to a learner doesn't deserve to be given a sanction like struck off indefinitely. And because of that particular precedent that has been created in the High Court of the Western Cape, we are looking at this, at each case on its own merits, and make sure that we deal with it accordingly. So this will be those that proposed, but it's up there, it never went further. And when we deal with that, we also take into account the High Court judgment that we received. I think I've dealt with all of them. Honorable Ching, I included yours when I dealt with the Honorable Chairperson's question on the academically qualified and professionally unqualified. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Tumbewa. Honorable Chair, Honorable Mpalang. Is there any member who
in a position to suspend it?
No.
So those issues again.
No, thank you very much.
While the teacher is going.
Let me also commend the two entities for their improved performance. Umalusi for an unqualified audit board with no material findings, which is also colloquially known as
disciplinary hearing and investigation,
are
also contributing to.
Maybe we must also move in that direction. We are moving in that direction, and I think we are motivated by the achievement of Malus. But I can assure the CEO that it won't take us
the intimidation,
because by then I'll be long gone. appreciate the achievement and celebrate that wonderful achievement. It's not a mean feat. It comes with sweat and hard toil on all accounts.
The intimidation that goes along.
I commend the days for their improvement as well. On a lighter note, Chair, I noticed that there is some active discrimination from the portfolio committee. When we improved, choosing the number of our findings were not commended. It's just on a lighter note. On a serious note,
honorable, yes, you're correct. What
is it? Honorable, I have requested the chair that time permitting, we should be allowed to come and give a comprehensive presentation on the education employment initiative, which is about 300,000 opportunities for young people
that you indicated.
I think it's appropriate that we find space to come and brief the committee about that.
I've already received some inquiries
from some members of both the portfolio and select committees.
Even if they propose or harass or whistle or spread unfavorable ways to Elena, especially to Elena.
Presentation there.
Disciplinary process reviewed in the High Court.
The 200,000 young people would be
Western educator who proposed was reviewed to Elena
I
think I've dealt with all of them honorably and professionally. And
thank you.
The other 100,000, the CEO of SAID correctly indicated
Elena doesn't deserve
employed
to
in
be
the area of screening.
And because of that, the Western team.
To maintain your sanitation.
We are looking at this, at each case
but
on its own merit.
We would definitely like to come
and make sure that
we've got other
deal with it. Stop there. It never went further. We deal with that, we also need to trust with
young people into our.
All of them, I will check the
schooling
stationery and
one of those to make sure that they are all vetted. But we also like to draw them from communities to use the community to actually help to vet them, but also use the normal systems that are there in the police station and so on to make sure that they are vetted and regularly monitor them as they come into contact with children in schools. The issue of teacher assistance, some of them, we're referring to them as education assistants. Some of them are referred to as teacher assistants. Teacher assistants are your reading coaches and homework assistants. The education assistants are those that I've referred to as essentially janitors, cleaners and screeners who would... of course, not be required to have NQF level 4, but much lower NQF to accommodate, particularly learners who come from schools of learners with special education needs, to facilitate inclusion even in our schools. That's a part of what this program is intended to do. And I'm sure you'd be happy to learn that a sizable number of them are expected to be, female. Up to 50% of them, we are seeing out of this 300,000, close to 50% of them must be female and must also include those learners from who would have gone through schools of learners with special education needs. Again, another inclusion and social cohesion in our schools. The CEO of UMACSI is right. There's a lot of work that we have started, Honorable King, around utilizing the deployment of ICT in education. It's a basket of interventions. I think the CEO, if afforded enough time, would have also told you that our standardization this year is not going to be face-to-face, but it's going to be on a virtual platform. We are going to convert many of our activities into a virtual mode. For instance, the standardization of marking is going to be a blended mode. There'll be those who elected to come and there'll be those who will be engaging virtually. So it's a basket of intervention, because writing exams virtually must also be preceded by other things. Teaching virtually, teaching and learning virtually, including assessment and so on, then culminating into public exams that could also be done virtually. Gauteng is doing work. Since last year, I visited a marking center where the marking was done virtually there. So we are bringing the, you know, the strength of the ICT into how we carry out our activities. And I think it's I mean, the issue of writing exams virtually, it's unavoidable. We are also going to start being big on online schools or virtual schools for those who like to, you know, to attend virtual schools, which will provide many advantages. We've got a few already here in Pretoria, in Cape Town, and in Johannesburg. So we're looking at even extending that to other provinces, so that they help to obviate challenges of infrastructure and so on. The GEC, I'm happy that the CEO has confirmed what we reported to the portfolio committee. Our target remains to, you know, to get the qualification hitting the ground in 2022. So we're going to work very hard for the whole of next year to make sure that we have our ducks in a row, so that the qualification is up and running on the 22nd. In 2022, rather, come 2022, then the qualification should be implemented in the system. Once more, let me commend the Umalusi team and the SAIS team for the hard work, for the wonderful work that they are doing, and pledge our support every step of the way. Thank you very much for the privilege. Today it was the day of the two entities, DBE. Well, we had to take a back seat. We will resume our position again next week. Thank you, and thank you, honorable members.
Thank you so much, Jim. And like you said, we have agreed. Probably what the secretary of the committee should do is to find us a slot before we close for this term, that you come and present to us this what do you call them, teacher assistants?
No, it's called Education Employed Initiative. Education Employment Initiative. EEI.
Yeah, for me now as a politician is teacher assistants, man, teacher.
It's teacher assistants and education assistants.
Yes.
We've got two categories. Yes. Yes.
So please, Llewellyn, find us a slot before, even if you couple it with another thing, so that we get a proper briefing from the department as well as members of the committee on this initiative, and we understand it better. Because I'm worried now Ms. Mukhalani just said as well, and I think DG, you really need to work on issues of communication as the department. You know, earlier this week it was unions who were claiming that you did not consult them on how examinations are going to unfold. Now, I think your communication strategy to the sector is very important, or your consultation rather, is very important. But that is it, way, like we have said, congratulations, Umalusi, congratulations, thanks on your improvements and on your audit outcomes. And all the best. We know it's a time for, especially for Umalusi now, with the examinations that have started. We hope you are going to give us good results amidst what we have gone through as the country as well. So thank you very much to our entities and to DBE. We are releasing you now as we are going to proceed with the adoption of the minutes.
Thank you very much, Chairperson and honorable members.
Thank you.
Honorable members, those are the minutes. We are 2 minutes. We've got 2 minutes. Those are the minutes on the of the meeting that we had on the 6th of November, 3 o'clock. It was a virtual meeting, and we had the Mpumalanga presenting to us, and we also had the petition from Swatere. On page 1 is the attendance, and page 2 of members of the committee and the select committee. And then you had the attendance from DBE, you had the attendance from Mpumalanga Department of Education, Northern Cape Department of Education, and of course Ms. Masebe and our staff. We welcome and introduced and made introduction, and then we had the address by the Deputy Minister, Maule, and then we had a presentation from Mpumalanga, which was done by HOD in Kosi. And then we had the observations from the both the members of the committee and select committee. And then there were responses which were led by the Deputy Minister and the DG, and then we had Mpumalanga Department of Education responding as well. And then we had engagements on the petition, which was done by Ms. Matebe. It was presented, and she also had an opportunity to speak. We had the DG making an input, and then the HOB of Northern Cape had also made an input, and the MC as well made an input, and then those were the observations from us as members of the both committee and select committee. And then Tere as well was given an opportunity to speak on the responses. And then DPE responded, and the MEC of Education, they responded. And then we had those resolutions. We had those resolutions that the members we have made, and then we considered and adopted the minutes of the 30th of October and the 3rd of November. And then our meeting adjourned at 7:27. So those are the minutes of the virtual meeting of the 6th of November. Any corrections? Any corrections? No corrections. Can I get a mover and a second for the minutes?
I move to adopt the minutes.
Thank you, Honorable Advance. Any seconder?
Chair.
I move to adopt the minutes. Thank you, Honorable Suela. Is seconding. And then, secondly, we've got the draft report on the petition, which was done by Ms. Matebe regarding the education and quality dual medium schools in Namakwa in the Northern Cape, and which is one day we are just making an introduction of what had happened and who's made the, who is the petitioner and is petitioning the Department of Education Northern Cape and TPE nationally. So that's the submission, which is done by Ms. Matebe as the petitioner. And then we are reiterating the input by the department and the responses from Director General Mueli and the input by the HOD of the Northern Cape and the Beuzana, and then that's the conclusion on the matter of Ms. Matebe in the Northern Cape. Can I allow members to reflect on corrections if there are any? If there is none, can we adopt the report? Can we adopt the report, members? What's up on a band, you say?
You go on a chair. I don't know.
It's only you and Sewela, actually.
Yeah, but Chairperson.
Okay, and second, Honorable Sewela.
Chairperson? Chairperson, I second.
Are you seconding? Oh, I see your hand is up.
Yeah, I second, Chair.
Okay. Okay, thank you very much, honorable members. That brings us then to the end of today's meeting. We are the next week, I think we will be having Limpopo, ne?
Yes, Chairperson, it's Limpopo, and we've added inclusive education as requested by members of the of both committees, Chairperson.
Oh, okay. But then my apologies up front, honorable members, for next week I'll be writing examinations, so
yes, Chairperson, and we've added
chairing the meeting
of both committees, Chairperson.
I'm taking leave now till I'm done with examinations. Thank you very much, members. The meeting is adjourned.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We forgot to actually send our condolences to the family of Kimi Makufu.
Oh, yeah.
Send condolences to the